From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
The UN base is a white building. It's marked, it's flagged, it's been there for 40, 50 years. It's known by everyone, so I mean, there is no excuse.
Israeli forces have attacked a UN base in southern Lebanon, killing four UN observers. Kofi Annan has called the attack deliberate. We'll speak with the former presidential candidate Denis Kucinich about Washington's refusal to call for an immediate ceasefire in Lebanon. But first, a warning from the American Bar Association.
The use of presidential signing statements by a president of the United States is destroying the system of checks and balances of our government, and it's also destroying the separation of powers doctrine that our founders gave us.
We'll speak with the president of the American Bar Association, Michael Greco. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan is accusing Israel of what he calls an apparently deliberate attack on a UN base in southern Lebanon that killed four UN observers. They were all members of the United Nations Interim Force in Lebanon, known as UNIFIL. According to the UN, Israel continued bombing the base as workers attempted to rescue the victims. Former UNIFIL spokesperson Timur Gaksel told Democracy Now! From Beirut the Israeli military must have known they were targeting a UN building.
UN base is a white building. It's marked, it's flagged, it's been there for 40, 50 years. It's known by everyone. So, I mean, there is no excuse for hitting that building. I just cannot accept that. I mean, as a not knowing or something. I mean, they know where that place is, and everybody knows what it is. And so I find it very, very difficult to accept as an excuse. I don't know what the official excuse is at the moment. It's very difficult to accept that.
Israel denies the bombing was deliberate. This is Israeli Foreign Ministry spokesperson Mark Regev.
Prime Minister Olmert spoke a short time ago to Secretary General Annan, and he expressed our regret and sorrow at this a terrible event, but we totally and unequivocally reject any charge that this was a deliberate act against a UN position. On the contrary, I know that from day one of this crisis we have been coordinating with UN personnel on the ground to ensure their safety and to make sure that UN personnel are not caught up in the fighting. That's not our intention.
Israel's also demanding Kofi Annan apologize for accusing it of a deliberate attack. The bombing has added further strain on Israel's relations with the UN. Israeli and U.S. officials have expressed outrage in recent days over the UN's criticism of its attack on Lebanon. In an interview with CNN on Sunday, UN High Commissioner Louise Arbour suggested Israel's actions in Lebanon could lead to the prosecution of its military commanders for war crimes.
It's pretty apparent that the scale of civilian casualties in this conflict raise very serious questions about breaches of the laws and customs of war in a way not only that is a breach of international humanitarian law, but that could engage international criminal law and could engage personal criminal responsibility all the way up the chain of command.
Meanwhile, the civilian death toll in Israel's bombing of Lebanon has grown to at least 406. At least 12 people were killed in Israeli airstrikes Tuesday, including two parents and their five children in a bombing of their home. Israel resumed heavy bombardment of Beirut, hitting at least 10 buildings Tuesday. Israel had halted the attacks while Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice visited Beirut Monday. Fighting between Israel and Hezbollah is intensifying. Israel's claiming it killed at least two dozen Hezbollah fighters in the last day. Meanwhile, at least 12 Israeli soldiers have been reported killed and 25 wounded in an invasion of the town of Bint Jebel, 2 miles north of the Israel-Lebanon border. Also Tuesday, Israel announced it will occupy a strip in southern Lebanon, even if fighting comes to a halt. Israel says it'll hold on to the territory until its troops are replaced by an international force that could confront Hezbollah. The Lebanese government has adopted Hezbollah's conditions for a ceasefire. The government wants Israel to return the border territory known as Sheba Farms in Lebanon to Lebanon, release three Lebanese prisoners and fly over Lebanese airspace and provide a map showing the location of Israeli landmines in southern Lebanon. Israel's rejected the conditions and maintains it will continue the attacks until two captured soldiers are released and Hezbollah is removed from parts of southern Lebanon. Hezbollah continues to launch rockets on Israeli towns. On Tuesday, Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah gave a televised statement threatening deeper missile strikes into Israeli territory. According to the Israeli military, more than 100 rockets were fired Tuesday. The strikes killed at least one person, a teenage Arab Israeli girl. Several homes were damaged in a Hezbollah strike on a village near Nesher. One of the homeowners had attended an anti-war rally in Tel Aviv earlier this week. The homeowner, Ruthie Gore, told Reuters she remains opposed to the war.
I was at the demonstration in Tel Aviv. I was against war. Here you see what war does. What is war? War is destruction.
Meanwhile, in Haifa, dozens of Israelis gathered Tuesday to protest the attack on Lebanon. The protesters carried signs, shouted slogans, and said Israel was dangerously following the Bush administration's policies. Fox News is reporting the Bush administration has given Israel approval to continue the attack on Lebanon for at least another 2 weeks. A senior Israeli official said the U.S. backs Israel's aim to give Hezbollah a strategic blow before it halts the attacks. Israel's shelling of residential areas and Lebanese infrastructure has led to accusations it's carrying out collective punishment. In an interview with The Washington Post, retired Israeli Army Colonel Gal Luft said the goal of Israel's attack is to, quote, create a rift between the Lebanese population and Hezbollah supporters. Colonel Luft added, quote, if you want your air conditioning to work and if you want to be able to fly to Paris for shopping, you must pull your head out of the sand and take action towards shutting down Hezbollah land. Meanwhile, Israel's attack on the Gaza Strip continues to claim the lives of more Palestinians. At least 10 people were killed and 30 wounded in Israeli strikes earlier today. The dead included a 3-year-old girl in northern Gaza town of Jabalia. On Tuesday, UN Emergency Relief Coordinator Jan Egeland was in Gaza to tour Palestinian infrastructure damaged by Israeli attacks. He described Israel's month-long campaign in Gaza as, quote, a disproportionate use of force. He emphasized Israel's bombing of Gaza's only power station.
With the destruction of all of the transformers of this power plant, the only one in Gaza, the Gazan people are going through a crisis of very little water, very little electricity, and this means more diarrhea, more disease, more suffering of children and civilian people. Electricity is really a line of life and hope for any society, anywhere.
In other news from Gaza, the Guardian of London's reporting Palestinian factions are coming close to an agreement to end rocket attacks on Israel and free the captured soldier Gilad Shalit. Several Palestinian factions, including members of Hamas, have reportedly agreed to a deal that would free Shalit and end rocket attacks in return for an end to Israel's assault on Gaza and the future release of Palestinian prisoners. The deal would need approval from Hamas's Syria-based leaders and from the Israeli government. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice wrapped up her visit to the Middle East with a meeting with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas in Ramallah Tuesday. Hundreds of people gathered outside Abbas's compound to protest the U.S. support for Israel's ongoing attacks in the Gaza Strip and Lebanon. In Gaza, Palestinian Prime Minister said the U.S. government is backing aggression.
In the name of the Palestinian government, we would like to express our condemnation of the prior American stances, which has granted the Israeli occupation a green light to continue with their aggression on the Palestinian people as well as the Lebanese people.
Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh in Gaza. Secretary Rice said she'd reached an agreement with Israel to allow humanitarian aid into Lebanon. But the Lebanese newspaper, The Daily Star, is reporting Israeli warships forbade a French vessel loaded with humanitarian aid from reaching a port in Lebanon. In Washington, President Bush addressed Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice's visit to the Middle East and continued to dismiss calls for a ceasefire.
So Condi goes with the following messages. We support the Sanaa government. We care about the people. We will help to get aid to the people. And that we want a sustainable ceasefire. We don't want something that's, short-term in duration. We want to address the root causes of the violence in the area. And therefore, our mission and our goal is to have a lasting peace, not a temporary peace, but something that lasts.
The president spoke during an appearance with Iraqi Prime Minister Nour al-Maliki. During the same appearance, Bush confirmed plans to move more U.S. troops into Baghdad.
This plan will involve embedding more U.S. military police with Iraqi police units to make them more effective. Prime Minister advised me that to support this plan, he and General Casey have agreed to deploy additional American troops and Iraqi security personnel in Baghdad in the coming weeks.
The president's announcement has raised concerns the U.S. presence could only increase the violence in Baghdad. Bombings and killings have worsened since U.S. and Iraqi troops launched a massive security crackdown 6 weeks ago. Baghdad's central morgue says it's received more than 1,000 bodies already this month. According to the United Nations, more than 100 Iraqis are being killed each day. Meanwhile, a group of leading Senate Democrats is criticizing Prime Minister al-Maliki's over his condemnation of Israel's attack on Lebanon. Maliki is scheduled to address a joint session of Congress later today. In a letter to Maliki, the senators write, quote, "Your failure to condemn Hezbollah's aggression and recognize Israel's right to defend itself raises serious questions about whether Iraq under your leadership can play a constructive role in resolving the current crisis and bringing stability to the Middle East." The signatories include Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid of Nevada and Senator Charles Schumer of New York. Al-Maliki's called for a ceasefire and condemned what he called Israel's operation of mass destruction and mass punishment. Several Democratic lawmakers, including Senator Hillary Clinton and Democratic Senate Leader House Leader Nancy Pelosi, have indicated they may boycott Maliki's speech today unless he renounces his comments. In other news, a federal judge in Illinois has dismissed a lawsuit over AT&T's alleged involvement in the Bush administration's domestic spying. U.S. District Judge Matthew Kennelly said forcing AT&T to confirm or deny its collaboration with the National Security Agency could jeopardize national security. The suit's one of several cases brought against telecom companies and the U.S. government over domestic spying. Just last week, a district judge in California ruled a similar lawsuit brought by the Electronic Frontier Foundation could proceed after rejecting the government's argument the case would harm national security. Meanwhile, in Missouri, the Justice Department filed a lawsuit Tuesday to prevent two members of the Missouri Public Service Commission from looking into whether consumers' telephone records were released to the National Security Agency. On Capitol Hill, the Senate approved a bill Tuesday that would make it illegal for anyone to accompany a young woman across state lines for an abortion without notifying her parents. The bill would leave a grandparent, clergy member, or relative open to prosecution. Senate Republicans rejected a Democratic proposal that would have granted an exemption to confidants of abused young women. In environmental news, a new report says global warming is endangering 12 of the most famous national parks in the United States. According to the Natural Resources Defense Council and Rocky Mountain Climate Organization, rising temperatures have led to the loss of wildlife and caused environmental damage. The groups say bear populations are declining and glaciers are melting at alarming rates. In other news, the American Civil Liberties Union has announced it'll appeal the recent dismissal of a lawsuit brought by Khaled al-Masri against the U.S. government. Masri is the German citizen who says he was kidnapped by the CIA and subjected to regular beatings and torture at a secret prison in Afghanistan. In May, a federal judge dismissed his case on grounds it would jeopardize state secrets. ACLU attorney Ben Wisner said, quote, "If this decision stands, the government will have a blank check to shield even its most shameful conduct from accountability." And finally, this breaking news. The condition of former Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon is worsening. The BBC is reporting Sharon has been taken to the emergency room at a Tel Aviv hospital after more than 6 months in a coma. Those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The largest lawyers group in the country has warned President Bush is undermining the Constitution by claiming he has the authority to ignore laws passed by Congress. A new report by the American Bar Association criticizes the president's unprecedented use of what's known as signing statements, through which he claims a right to ignore or not enforce sections of bills that he signs into law. The report declares, quote, "The Constitution is not what the president says it is." Since Bush took office, he's issued over 800 signing statements, more than all other presidents in American history combined. The ABA's report was written by a bipartisan task force, including several well-known conservatives, including President Reagan's FBI Director William Sessions, former Republican Congressmember Mickey Edwards, and Bruce Fein, who served in the Bush administration, is with the Heritage Foundation. Michael Greco is the president of the American Bar Association. He joins us from our studio in Washington, D.C. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Michael Greco.
Good morning.
Well, why don't you talk about your findings?
The American Bar Association has a task force looking at the presidential signing statements practice. We released the report 2 days ago here in Washington. The major finding of the task force is that a president's use of signing statements to ignore enforcement of laws is violating the Constitution. The report also found that the system of checks and balances in which the three branches of government have powers, clearly delineated but clearly limited, are being harmed by the practice of the president in denying Congress its proper role in the process of government.
Michael Greco, for non-lawyers, can you explain exactly what these signing statements are and why suddenly the president is using them hundreds of times? How does the process actually work? He sits down and signs a bill, and then what?
Under the Constitution, Congress enacts a law, sends it to the president. The president has two choices under the Constitution: either approve that law in toto without picking and choosing which portions he's going to enforce, or he vetoes it. Those are the only two choices. Now comes something called a presidential signing statement that presidents had used before President Bush, but before President Bush, all presidents combined had only issued 600 signing statements. President Bush, in the last 5.5 years, has issued more than 800 of them. What a presidential signing statement is a little statement that the president attaches to a bill when he signs it, and the president, in essence, is saying in that little statement, I find some fault or some problem with this law, and I don't intend to enforce a part of it or all of it because I think it's either unconstitutional or it interferes with my powers. That little statement has taken on a new life in the last 25 years. Before President Reagan, that statement was mostly ceremonial. Only a handful of times did a president indicate in that statement that he intended not to enforce the law. Since 1980, we have hundreds of them, and most of those hundreds, 800 of them, belong to President Bush. Let me make one thing clear. We are not singling out President Bush. This practice of signing statements precedes him, but the frequency and the purpose to which this president and future presidents might make of the signing statement is what is of concern to the American Bar Association, because it is harming the separation of powers and checks and balances system that has seen us through for the last two centuries in this country.
Explain how he could use it.
Well, the signing statement he indicates that he's not going to enforce a portion of all. Let me give you an example. The country was so ashamed when we learned that our military personnel were torturing prisoners. Senator John McCain pressed for a law. The White House tried to dissuade Senator McCain from pressing that law. When Congress said essentially, we are going to enact this law, the president commended Congress for enacting that law. But when he signed that law, he attached a statement to it saying that if he determines that enforcement of that law would interfere with his duties as president and authority as president, he will ignore it. So that's the effect of signing statements as recent presidents have used them. And they are corrosive. They are damaging to our system of government. And that's why this bipartisan ABA task force, as you said at the top, comprised of some very distinguished and respected conservatives, as well as liberals, Republicans, and Democrats, came out with a unanimous report finding the practice of a president using these signing statements to violate the Constitution of the United States.
Michael Greco, we have to break for 60 seconds. We'll be back with you. Michael Greco is president of the American Bar Association. Later, we'll be joined by Congressmember Dennis Kucinich. He's attempting to get into the Capitol building, but they're not letting him in as he tries to make his way into the studio, into his own house, the House of the People. He says it's unclear why they're not letting the congressman in. Stay with us. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Our guest is the president of the American Bar Association, Michael Greco. The American Bar Association Committee Task Force has come out with a report finding President Bush's signing statements undermine the separation of powers. You've given examples in the report of the kinds of bills that he has used a signing statement with. Can you give us a few?
Well, the one I mentioned before the break, the torture amendment, which was of such importance to Congress and to the American people to say to the world, we don't torture people. If the president, after Congress has deliberated and enacted that law, announces in a signing statement that he doesn't intend to enforce that, that's a very serious matter. Another example is that Congress enacted another law requiring the president to report to Congress any incidents in which the Patriot Act, the USA Patriot Act, was being misused, to report on the number of times that Americans have been spied on and other such information. He attached a signing statement to that bill as well, saying that if he believes that enforcing that bill would interfere with his presidential powers, he will ignore it. One thing should be pointed out. If the president believes that a law that Congress has enacted is unconstitutional or he has other problems with it, the Constitution provides him with an avenue. He can veto that bill. No one expects the president to enforce a law that he is uncomfortable with. But instead of vetoing these bills and sending it back to Congress so that Congress can deal with the president's concerns and either modify that bill to address those concerns or override the veto by a two-thirds vote, what the president is doing is denying Congress that power given to it in the Constitution. That's what we mean when we're talking about destroying the system of checks and balances, because recent presidents, and it isn't just President Bush, recent presidents have been seizing more and more power from the other two branches to create a more powerful executive branch. The founders of this country separated those powers precisely so that we would not have a monarch or a king or an all-powerful executive branch. That's how serious this issue is.
We're talking to Michael Greco, president of the American Bar Association. The Senate Judiciary Committee is holding a hearing today on modernizing the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA. Can you talk about the new FISA bill that's been proposed by Senator Arlen Specter?
The American Bar Association issued a report from another task force that I appointed as ABA president back in January. And in that report, also from a bipartisan group of distinguished conservatives and liberals, that report was also unanimous. And in that report, we urged that Congress not enact any legislation amending FISA until Congress knows what's going on. 7 months after the New York Times disclosed the existence of the secret spying program, the administration still has not informed Congress, other than a couple of committees, some members of those committees, of what this program is all about. So first and foremost, the ABA task force has said, do not take any action on any legislation until we know, until you, Congress, know what is involved. How can you legitimize this program until you know what's in it? The Specter bill, unfortunately, to our view, legitimizes what's going on now without Congress or the American people knowing what's in that program, number one. Number two, the ABA's position is there's no reason to do drastic surgery on FISA. That bill, enacted in 1978 to address abuses by the then administration of spying on Americans, has some very important safeguards in it. It requires that before someone is spied on, that a warrant be gotten by the Justice Department or by the prosecution or the prosecutors. Any amendment to FISA, and some of these bills, including the Specter bill and others, would eliminate that requirement of a warrant. And in doing that, damage, fatal damage, would be done to the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. And we can't afford to have one of our Bill of Rights so easily dismissed. The Fourth Amendment requires that there be a warrant issued and that there be probable cause existing before someone is spied on. Any bill that Congress enacts must continue to have those two Fourth Amendment protections. In a nutshell, that's the ABA's position, and the Specter bill, as much as we admire and respect Senator Specter for bringing this to the forefront, we think that bill, it falls way short of the protections that the American people deserve to have under FISA and under the Fourth Amendment.
Michael Greco is outgoing president of the American Bar Association, the nation's largest law association, association of lawyers in this country. Can you talk about the issues of torture, the Hamdan decision, and the issues of extraordinary rendition?
As I said a moment ago, when all of us in our country learned that our military was torturing people, when we learned that people were being held detained at Guantanamo without access to family, to lawyers, to a judge, to review the reasons for that incarceration, these are just some examples of the kinds of freedoms issues that the American Bar Association addresses to protect our constitutional rights. The Supreme Court of the United States, in two decisions, in 2004 and again about 3 weeks ago, made it clear that the war on terror does not give the president a blank check to deny fundamental freedoms that are protected by the Constitution. We are not a country that has tortured people, and it shamed all of us, and that is why the ABA adopted a policy resolution condemning that and asking Congress, urging Congress to hold hearings to find out who caused that torture, why it happened, and to ensure that it'll never happen again. Congress has not held such hearings. We continue to urge Congress to get beneath that torturing system so that we can find out why and prevent it from happening again. These series of issues that you've just mentioned are issues of great concern not only to the ABA but to all of us in this country. We want security. We want our nation to be secured. We want the president and the administration to protect us, but not at the expense of giving up our constitutional freedoms. Because if we do that voluntarily, then we are doing the work of the terrorists that are trying to destroy our democracy. We would be doing it to ourselves, and that would be the ultimate harm inflicted on ourselves.
Michael Greco, would you call the presidency of President Bush dangerous?
I think that's too sweeping a statement. I think the president and the administration are doing their job as they see fit and in the best way they can. There are legitimate differences of opinion as to how the war on terror is being conducted. We say at the ABA, and a lot of scholars around the country say, that we can fight the war on terror and also protect our freedoms. It's not an either-or. It should not be an either-or. Anyone who says that you have to choose national security over constitutional freedoms is giving the American people a false choice. I reject that false choice. The American Bar Association rejects that false choice. We can do both, and we must do both, for the good not only of our current citizenry, but for generations to come. We have to protect our freedoms while we are winning the war on terror.
Michael Greco, I want to thank you for being with us, president of the American Bar Association, speaking to us from Washington, D.C.
Thank you.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. As we turn now to the ongoing crisis in Lebanon. Yesterday, Israeli bombs fell on an observer post for the United Nations peacekeeping force in Lebanon, known as UNIFIL. Four observers were killed in the blast, which UN Secretary General Kofi Annan called apparently deliberate. Israeli officials have agreed to launch an investigation into the incident, but deny that the attack was intentional. We're going now to the telephone. We'll attempt to go to the telephone in Beirut to speak with Timur Goksal, the former spokesperson and senior advisor for UNIFIL. He teaches at Notre Dame University and the American University of Beirut. We'll see if we have him on the line right now. Timur Goksal, are you there? Timur Goksal? We will try to get him on the line. We're going to go to a brief music break. It's tough to get through to Beirut right now and try to get to the UNIFIL former spokesperson. A music break. Timur Goksal, former spokesperson for UNIFIL, is on the line with us from Beirut. We welcome you to Democracy Now! Timur Goksal, are you with us?
Okay.
Are you with us? Can you respond to the killing of the four UN workers in southern Lebanon?
It's a big loss. It's an unnecessary loss. It's, these people have been working there 50, 60 years in very well-marked positions. They are made out of armed officers. There are four different nationalities, as you might have heard. And it's a very sad loss. It's a totally unnecessary loss because of an ill-disciplined action by the other side. That's what it is. And it's heartbreaking, but it's not the first time, unfortunately.
Can you explain what you mean, this is not the first time?
Well, we had UN soldiers and officers killed by inside fire before. One difference is that this time they tend to apologize. In the past, they did not even apologize.
They are the Prime Minister of Israel is demanding an apology from the UN Secretary General Kofi Annan for saying that this attack on the UN base was deliberate.
I mean, I don't know the technical background, what they mean by that. I mean, but as I said, I can only go by past experience and say that I cannot tell if it's deliberate or not. I don't have that information. But what I know is this side of mindset against the UN force in South Lebanon, which they always treated with contempt and which they've been denigrating very badly in the last few days. And that filters down to their own people, who are not very famous for their fight discipline anyway. And they just don't care. That's all I can tell you. I cannot say it is deliberate or not deliberate. What I can tell you is, and I'm not going to apologize for it, is they don't care. That's it.
What do you mean they don't care?
They don't care if they kill a UN man or anybody on the Lebanese side. For them, their own life is sacred, their own troops are sacred. They have a mission, and if the UN gets in the way or UN happens to be there, if the UN hits, so be it. That's what I'm saying.
Timur Gokcel, yesterday on CNN, the Consul General of Israel, in talking about UNIFIL, said that they were sympathetic to Hezbollah. Can you respond to that?
That is the biggest. Look, UNIFIL came here in 1978. Because at that time there was no Hezbollah. We were accused of being sympathetic to the Palestinians. A peacekeeper does not come here with preset enemies. There is no enemy in a peacekeeping force. UNIFIL is a peacekeeping force. It's not an Israeli combat force or anti-terror force, as they would like it to be. As long as we don't serve their direct interests, they are going to denigrate it as much as they can. What do you mean, Hezbollah? Hezbollah people are the people, are Lebanese people. They are not from outer space. They live in those villages, and a peacekeeping force, first of all, primarily, lives on its goodwill with the population of the area. And on this one, nobody can deny UNIFIL success. So if that includes, if I'm being friendly with a local village and at night time with Hezbollah guerrilla, what? Am I a Hezbollah sympathizer? I'm talking with a villager. So I mean, this is Israeli propaganda. There's enough of this. And they've been doing it all their life. I think they should give up and find something more novel than this.
Timur Gokcel, as you understand it, what exactly happened? Where is the UN base? And the allegation that the base was attacked, and then when UN workers were going to help the bombing victims, they were attacked again. Can you explain the sequence of events? Timur Gokcel, I think we have lost the former spokesperson for UNIFIL, speaking to us from Beirut, a senior advisor to UNIFIL in 1995, teaches at Notre Dame University and American University of Beirut, speaking to us again from Lebanon. In just a few minutes, we will be going to Congressmember Kucinich. He made it into the building, into the Capitol. But we're going to turn first to Gaza. The UN's top humanitarian official, Jan Egeland, is accusing the Israeli military of using a disproportionate amount of force in Gaza. Over the past month, more than 100 Palestinians have been killed. Earlier today, Israeli forces killed 7 Palestinians, including a 3-year-old girl. Egeland also criticized Israel targeting the Palestinian civilian infrastructure, including Gaza's only power plant. On Tuesday, Palestinian factions, including Hamas and Islamic Jihad, have agreed to stop firing rockets at Israel and to free the captured Israeli soldier, Corporal Gilad Shalit, in exchange for the release of Palestinian prisoners held in Israel. Israel, however, has not agreed to the deal. In other developments, the Israeli human rights group B'Tselem has accused the Israeli army of using Palestinian civilians as human shields in an operation in the northern town of Beit Hanun last week. We're joined on the phone right now by Dr. Mustafa Barghouti. He's the Secretary General of the Palestinian National Initiative and President of the Palestinian Medical Relief Committee. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you.
It's good to have you with us. Can you first respond to this news that there may be some deal worked out for the release of the Israeli soldier?
Yes, absolutely. There is a deal, and this deal is accepted by Palestinian groups, and there are certain international mediators that have been mediating to conclude it with Egypt. And the deal is about releasing the Israeli soldier, and in exchange for releasing a small or limited number of Palestinian prisoners, with a promise that a bigger number will be released out of the 10,000 Palestinian prisoners that include 150 women and 450 children, and to have complete and total bilateral ceasefire, which means Israel would stop completely bombarding Gaza, take out its troops from Gaza Strip, and Palestinians would abstain from any form of military action. I think it's a great deal. I don't know why the Israelis do not want to implement it.
So Israel has not agreed to this?
No, up to now Israel refuses to agree, and we believe that Israel has before spoiled every existing ceasefire by continuing the assassination attacks and the bombardment of places in West Bank and Gaza. And the world does not know that there was a time of 3 months when Palestinians completely abstained from any form of military actions and Israel continued the attacks like they did today. Today, the Israeli attack has taken the lives not of 7 people, as you have mentioned, but of 13 people. And that brings the total death toll in Palestine by the most recent Israeli operations in Gaza and in the West Bank. It brings it up to 41 people have been killed, mostly civilians, mostly children and women. Hello?
Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice went to Ramallah to meet with Mahmoud Abbas. There was a protest of hundreds outside. Can you talk about the position of the United States and the position of the people who are protesting?
Well, I don't think that the people were protesting against the United States. Nobody has or wants to be in animosity with the United States. This is not the case on the Palestinian side. But people were protesting the bias of the American position to Israel. This total bias that is unprecedented and that is paralyzing the ability of the United States to play a constructive role in the Middle East. We believe that the positions that the United States administration has taken are so biased to Israel and so supportive of Israel that, in our opinion, it even contradicts the national interest of the United States itself. And we don't understand it's difficult for people here to understand how a lobby can be so powerful in the case of the United States to the level of making a country take decisions that are counterproductive to even its own national interest. But we know one thing, that the United States can play a constructive role in one particular manner, and that is in pressuring Israel to accept international law and apply international law. If there is a country in the world at this very moment that can pressure Israel to follow international law and human rights regulations, it is the United States. Because without the United States, Israel has no ability to continue this military operation. Israel has been acting with a sense of complete impunity to international law and to generally accepted human rights values by the destruction it is creating in Lebanon, the destruction it has been creating systematically in the West Bank and Gaza Strip, and by violating every existing international law when it comes to the issue of occupation. And now they're even attacking the UN observers. I don't think there is any country in the world that dares to do these things except Israel. And I think the United States must practice its ability to pressure Israel. And the big question that we have is why the United States does not accept our call for having an international peace conference to proceed with a truthful peace process, to put all the issues on the table, to end the long-standing problem of occupation that has been there for almost 40 years, and pave the road for a solution.
Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, I want to thank you very much for being with us, Secretary General of the Palestinian National Initiative, speaking to us from Ramallah, from the West Bank. This is Democracy Now! We come back from our break. Congressmember Dennis Kucinich will join us. He has a proposal for a ceasefire in the Middle East. Stay with us. Thank you. Yearning by Rahim Al-Haj here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. We're broadcasting on over 450 radio and television stations around the country, on Pacifica radio stations, NPR stations, low-power FM, college and community stations, public access TV and PBS stations, and both TV satellite networks, Dish Network Channel 9415 Free Speech TV, 9410 Link TV, as well as DirecTV Channel 375. And we are video and audio podcasting at democracynow.org. All our transcripts are on our website at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. As the Israeli attacks on Lebanon enter their third week, pressure is growing on the Bush administration to back an immediate ceasefire. On Capitol Hill, 24 members of the House of Representatives have backed a resolution calling on the president to appeal to all sides in the current crisis for an immediate cessation of violence. The resolution also calls for the United States to send diplomats to multi-party negotiations. The author of the resolution, Democratic Congressmember Dennis Kucinich of Ohio. He joins us from Capitol Hill right now. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Congressmember Kucinich.
Good morning, Amy.
It's good to have you with us. What have you laid out? What is your resolution?
Well, the resolution is House Concurrent Resolution 450, and it calls upon the president to seek an immediate cessation of the violence, to have the United States lead the way towards multi-party talks without any preconditions.
And what kind of support are you getting?
Well, there's a couple dozen right now members of Congress who have signed on. I'm in constant discussion with members of Congress, and I'm hopeful that as the American public continue to watch aghast at the violence that is occurring both in the Palestinian areas as well as throughout Lebanon, as well as the attacks that are continuing on Israel, that people all over will say, look, it's time for the U.S. to step in and say, stop this. Let's bring everyone together. Let's, in the short term, stop the violence. In the long term, bring about a negotiated settlement involving all parties.
Congressmember Kucinich, I'd like to play for you President Bush's comment yesterday as he was standing with the Nouri al-Maliki visiting from Iraq.
So Condi goes with the following messages. We support the Sanaa government. We care about the people. We will help to get aid to the people. And that we want a sustainable ceasefire. We don't want something that's, short-term in duration. We want to address the root causes of the violence in the area. And therefore, our mission and our goal is to have a lasting peace, not a temporary peace, but something that lasts.
President Bush, Congressmember Kucinich, your response.
Well, President Bush, of course, must recognize that a ceasefire would stop the violence in the short term and lead to a long-term negotiation if he would step into it, get off the sidelines, get involved, and get all members, all the parties involved to begin talking to one another. No preconditions, bring them together. I mean, that's what the president ought to be doing. That's what every other country in the world, except one, is asking the United States to do. The world is waiting for leadership right now. The U.S. must not stand on the sideline. There are people dying everywhere in this region, and the U.S. indifference is something that must be challenged by the Congress, which is why I introduced the resolution.
Congressmember Kucinich, do you really think it's standing on the sidelines and not getting involved, or is it more directly the United States wanting Israel to rout out Hezbollah?
Well, whatever it is, Congress has a role to play here and ought to be heard from as representatives of the American people. I mean, this resolution is all about trying to find a direction towards peace, but first, in the short term, stop the violence. In the long term, bring the parties together. The way the administration is going about this right now is not only not constructive, but it actually is enabling violence to escalate, and we should not do that. I mean, I think that out of just compassion alone, we should be saying, calling for an immediate ceasefire. But going beyond that, it's in the interest of the world to stop this escalation of violence.
We're talking to Congressmember Dennis Kucinich. He's standing outside the Capitol. Did your cameraman have trouble going inside today in the security around the Iraqi prime minister speaking before Congress?
It's a lovely day out here, I can tell you. And, I'm not aware of any difficulties of that sort. I'm looking forward to hearing the Prime Minister's speech. It's going to be interesting to see how the country continues to square the spending of over $300 billion, the loss of 2,500 and more American lives, the loss of over 100,000 Iraqi lives, the attempt by the United States to try to insist on a permanent presence there, I think is wearing thin among the Iraqi people. There's tremendous pressure on this prime minister, and I'm hopeful that he's going to agree with our efforts, many of us in Congress, to bring our troops home, to end the U.S. occupation, and to give the Iraqi people a chance at true self-determination. Our presence there right now is helping to cycle a civil war and the sectarian violence that President Bush now wants to address by sending more troops to Baghdad will only be fed by sending more troops to Baghdad.
Let me play for you another clip of President Bush addressing that very issue.
This plan will involve embedding more U.S. military police with Iraqi police units to make them more effective. Prime Minister advised me that to support this plan, he and General Casey have agreed to deploy additional American troops and Iraqi security personnel in Baghdad in the coming weeks.
Congressmember Kucinich.
What that means is that this president wants a long-term presence for the United States in Iraq. They've built permanent bases. They're talking about spending hundreds of billions more. We need to get our troops out of there. He's sending them into the fire, and it's time that we recognize that the interest of our troops, if we really support our troops, we would bring them home. And our presence there has helped to inspire a civil war. We're inciting it by sending more troops. This is a time for the U.S. to reappraise everything about our journey into Iraq. Think about this. On one hand, we're in a place we shouldn't be, and they're causing more violence by our presence. On the other hand, in a place where we should get involved, involving the violence that's taking place in the Palestinian areas and the Lebanese areas, and of course, you know, Israel's suffering too. Look, we ought to be involved there. So this administration needs some help. My role in Congress is to organize members of Congress to show them, the administration, there's another way to deal with problems in the world other than just violence. You know, you can bomb the world to pieces, but you can't bomb the world to peace.
Didn't Michael Franti say something about that?
Michael Franti is, that's who I got it from. And, you know, Spearhead has done a great job in taking a new message of the potential of peace. And Michael and I talk, and I want to say that what he had to say is relevant today. I mean, there's a type of thinking, Amy, that we have to challenge. This thinking that somehow violence is going to produce peace. Haven't we learned anything? 100 million people died in wars in the 20th century. We're on a fast track now to have great numbers of people die in wars in this century. Where's our talent for peacemaking? Where's the expectations of our public officials pursuing the science of human relations to show that we're capable of talking to one another, to settle our differences, that we don't have to kill each other? I mean, this administration has to have a vision that goes beyond its nose, which says, you know, just war, war, war. They have a talent for war making. We ask that they have a talent for peacemaking, and that's why I've introduced that resolution.
Congressmember Kucinich, a group of leading Senate Democrats is criticizing Prime Minister al-Maliki over his recent condemnation of Israel's attack on Lebanon, as scheduled, of course, to address Congress today. In a letter to Maliki, the senators wrote, "Your failure to condemn Hezbollah's aggression and recognize Israel's right to defend itself raises questions about whether Iraq, under your leadership, can play a constructive role in resolving the current crisis and bringing stability to the Middle East." The signatories include the Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid of Nevada, Senator Charles Schumer of New York. Al-Maliki's called for a ceasefire, condemned what he's called Israel's operation of mass destruction and mass punishment. And several Democratic lawmakers, including Senator Hillary Clinton, as well as Democratic House Leader Nancy Pelosi, have indicated they may boycott Maliki's speech today unless he renounces his comments. What is your position?
Well, the U.S. indifference and inaction at the current crisis isn't winning any friends for the United States, and it's not helping Israel. That's why what I'm saying, I've taken an approach that brings all the parties together. So we stop this this condemnation that's going back and forth. You know, Abraham Lincoln gave a speech in his second inaugural that I think is a template for diplomacy and dialogue. He said, with malice towards none, with charity for all. I mean, we have to have the capacity of going past the rhetoric and overlooking the slights and finding a way to bring people together. That's the only way we can stop a widening war.
We're talking to Congressmember Dennis Kucinich. So you will be there for al-Maliki's comments today?
Of course I'm going to be there. And, you know, while I disagree with this administration's policies, I think it's important to hear from Maliki and as to what his hopes are for Iraq. And I hope to have a chance to speak to him and let him know that there are people in the United States Congress who support ending the occupation and bringing the United States troops home, and who also believe we have a moral obligation to help rebuild Iraq. We blew it up. We've destroyed that nation, and we've done it with our military power. We have an obligation to help the people of Iraq.
The Senate race that's taking place right now in Connecticut, that certainly, well, the question is it shaking up the Democratic Party overall? You've got the Democratic stalwart, right, Lieberman, who is very much under siege right now, being challenged by a vociferous anti-war candidate, Ned Lamont. What's happening to the Democratic Party, and do you support an immediate withdrawal of troops from Iraq?
Well, Amy, I suppose you remember that I led the effort in the Congress in challenging the Bush administration's march toward war. I organized 125 Democrats years ago in voting against the resolution. I continue to participate with all members of Congress who want our troops brought home. We need to bring them home immediately. And as far as the Democratic Party, look, the Democratic Party needs to be heard from on matters of war and peace. Our party had failure to take a position as a party in 2004 contributed to the defeat of the Democratic Party. Our party's unwillingness to take a position in 2002 helped to keep the Republicans in power. I think that the people expect the Democrats to offer viable alternatives. That's what I've been about. I've shown people that Democrats can stand for peace. We can stand for seeing the world as interconnected and interdependent, that it's possible that we can have not just peaceful coexistence, but international cooperation. I mean, that needs to be the impulse of the world. And this political party, this Democratic political party, is not measuring up to the expectations of people. But even so, it's a lot better than a Republican party.
This news has just come in from BBC, Congressmember Kucinich. Israel troops ignored UN plea. UN peacekeepers in South Lebanon contacted Israel 10 times before an Israeli bomb killed 4 UN personnel. The post was hit by a precision-guided missile after 6 hours of shelling nearby. Diplomats familiar with the initial probe into the deaths say the news comes during crisis talks in Rome seeking to end the fighting between Hezbollah and Israel. The UN Secretary General has called for a ceasefire as fighting continues and says that the bombing was deliberate. Your position on this, do you condemn the bombing?
I'm condemning the loss of life anywhere. There's a lot of innocent people being killed. And those who serve in the United Nations and are there in the cause of peace have to be revered. Certainly an investigation is forthcoming. And I just hope an investigation will not show that this was deliberate. That would be appalling. And whether it was deliberate or accidental, the effect is the same. The loss of life of people who are trying to be in the service of peace, this shows you how urgent it is for the United States to change its course, to call for an immediate cessation of violence, to bring all the parties together, and to, without preconditions, and such multi-party talks will be the path towards a long-term resolution. The U.S. must recognize that we have to talk to one another.
Congressmember Kucinich, we have to leave it there. Thank you very much, Ohio Congressmember, former Democratic presidential candidate. That does it for the broadcast. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Sharif Abdul-Qudush, John Hamilton, Elizabeth Press, Yuba Rich, and Aramate Frank Lopez. Special thanks to Danielle Strandberg-Peshkin. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.